Let me see. What was I going to say? Yeah, the 19 kind of this year being January, 2019. Those cars are on the road. But if you're thinking of getting a new car or a second-hand one, basically, here's the question: what should you look for? How are you going to pay for it? And how do you know you're getting a good deal? Well, I haven't got a rashers about all this kind of thing. But luckily, motoring journalist Geraldine Herbert from the Indo Etc. does, and she's here to answer all of those questions and more. So, whatever questions you have, 51552 in terms of cars, which I don't know an awful lot about, Geraldine. Traditional types we'll start with. By the way, welcome. What are the things to consider when choosing, say, petrol or diesel?
Morning, Dave.
That put me in my place.
Well, I mean, the problem is, Dave, that we've a lot of people in Ireland driving diesel cars that don't necessarily need them, and that goes back to a decade ago when they changed the motor tax system. Basically, we used to have 70% petrol and 30% diesel. They changed the tax system in favour of diesel and we all went out and bought diesel. So I think people are now assessing more what we actually need.
And does one not need diesel if one lives in a built-up area where they're not really doing an awful lot of driving getting from A to B? Is that it?
You know, a decade ago, like 30% were diesel, and that's probably the core diesel market. It's rural Ireland. It's people who need towing capacity. It's very high mileage. If you're not doing those things, you're better off considering something. First of all, petrol. Petrol, the efficiency in petrol has become much, much better. So the downside of petrol is the high emissions means you pay more motor tax, because as I said, our motor tax at the moment system benefits diesel. They tend to be less efficient, fuel efficient than diesel. That's why people with high mileage go for diesel. But low mileage drivers, definitely you're far better off. They're cheaper to service, they're cheaper to buy, so definitely consider petrol. As I said, diesel is still though a popular choice in Ireland, and about half of the cars we bought in 2018 were still diesel. Probably too many people buying them that really don't need them. But if you do high mileage, serious high mileage, towing capacity, that sort of thing, there just isn't an alternative.
Okay, fair enough. That's petrol, diesel. So what about the more modern engines, the electrics, the hybrids, all that stuff?
Yeah, we're not very good at buying electric cars, Dave. We haven't made that leap mentally in our head. The whole idea of range anxiety, I think it's just there's a misconception about them, and people just think, oh God, I'll be 5 minutes down the road and I'll run out.
Well,
and
is the backup there?
Yeah, the problem is people who I spoke to who actually own an electric car say the car is brilliant, the range is great, but the infrastructure, that's the actual charging network, is really unreliable. And one of the biggest issues, Dave, is you check on the map, it says, you know, you're going down to Cork and this point is actually working, and you think, I'll have a cup of coffee there, I'll charge, you get there and it's not working. That's the problem.
You know, I don't know anybody with an electric car. Is that bad? Is that odd?
There's a few in RTE, I've seen them parked.
I don't know them.
No, but that, I think that's the problem. You need to get a critical mass on the road. So, you know, you're down in the pub and the guy in the pub, you know, drives one, that somebody at the school gate has one. We're just not getting there. About 1% of all new car sales are electric. What is selling though are hybrids. Hybrids now have normally a petrol engine and they have an electric motor. So this is what you get, the reassurance of knowing you're never going to run out of range. You still get very good fuel efficiency. So that's what people are opting for. And about 6% of the new cars that were bought last year were hybrids. So the market is moving more towards those than making that big leap
towards
electric.
But again, are hybrids better if you're living in a place with the traffic lights all the time? If you're doing long distance...
Okay, the problem with hybrids is the petrol engine. Once you get on a motorway, you're essentially relying on a petrol engine. Petrol engines are not very good on a motorway. So you need a kind of mix of a lot of urban driving. If you're doing a lot of, you know, the stopping and starting congested driving, hybrids are great. And doing the odd journey on the motorway, it'll balance out then. Again, Dave, you need to do your homework. It's all about mileage and not even so much mileage, but what sort of driving you do. That's a key factor as well.
Okay, what about a plug-in hybrid?
Plug-in hybrids are exactly as they say. They're hybrids, except you can plug the electric battery directly into the mains. So it means you get a longer range on the electric. So you might get 50 kilometres as opposed to maybe 20 or 10 in an ordinary hybrid. So you get better fuel efficiency. The only thing with them, Dave, is they tend to be more expensive and there isn't as many of them on, you know, as an option.
All right, okay. Okay, types of cars, what we're talking about. What about buying it? I mean, most people probably go second-hand. What should they be watching out for?
Okay, second-hand cars, there's two ways you can do it. You can buy through a dealership or you can buy privately. If you buy through a dealership, particularly if you buy through a SIMI dealer, that's Society of Irish Motor, you're covered by their code of conduct, you're covered by consumer law. If you buy privately, Dave, it really is buyer beware.
Right, yeah, okay.
You have very few consumer rights. So there's a few things you need to do. The first thing you need to do is ensure that the car... that there's no outstanding finance, or the car hasn't been stolen, or it hasn't been clocked, or something like that. Now, Cartel did a survey 2 weeks ago, and they discovered that 16% of all cars being offered for sale in Ireland at the moment have outstanding finance. So therefore, these are cars that are actually owned by the finance house, and the person selling them doesn't have the right to sell them. If you get yourself into a situation like that, you may as well have bought a stolen car. you really have no recourse.
I have a figure here. It says in 2015, of the 6,128 vehicles stolen, almost 4,000 were recovered by the Gardaí. But where did the rest of them end up?
Shipped out of the country, are broken down for parts. What happens to them. Yeah. So if you're going to buy, if you're going to buy privately, particularly, or even if you're buying from a dealership, do a history check. A history check will tell you if the car has been written off, if it's been involved in an accident and written off. It'll tell you if it's been stolen. It will tell you if it's been clocked, as in the mileage has been rolled back. It will tell you if there's outstanding finance. So before you even want to think about the car, you need to check those things out. Then, if you still are thinking about the car, I would ensure that the seller actually has the right to sell the car, so you've established that, but make sure that the car you're buying is the car you did the history check on. I know that sounds odd, Dave, but no, you need to check the VIN number to make sure that the two actually tally, because if it's a cloned car, the history report is actually on a different car.
There's all those sort
of things. And then if you really still like it, make sure the seller is who he says he is or she is. So just get some sort of an ID, a driver's license or something, and get a mechanic to have a look
at
it.
So it can't be Dolly the sheep. You've got to go back to the original.
Okay.
Now, what about the ways of buying? You know, whatever you're buying, it's going to cost a pretty penny, to say the least. So what are the different ways?
In terms of finance?
Yeah,
probably the two most common ways is you either go to the credit union or the bank and you borrow money and you buy. And this is kind of the way people used to do it before, and you get a loan and you use maybe your own car as a trade-in and you throw in the extra bit then with the loan. You pay it over a certain amount of time, you own the car from day one. The other, the more kind of newer way, and about a third of all cars now are being bought like this, is PCP.
PCP, that's the personal contract plan.
Yeah, okay, so I'm impressed, Dave, I really
don't be.
You can read, I know that.
Exactly, that's the point.
Okay, with PCP, essentially what you're doing is you're paying off the depreciation. You're not going to own the car. You can own the car if you want to, but how it works is you've kind of, you go in and you put maybe a 10 or a 30%, anywhere between 10 and 30% deposit on a car. Mm. So say you're looking at a 20,000 euro car, Dave, you put down say 2,000. Now the dealer will say to you is you're going to be on a contract for 3 years. At the end of that 3 years, the car is going to be worth 10,000. So you take away the deposit, take away the 10,000, and you're left with 8,000 in the middle. That's basically how much the car is going to lose over the 3 years, and that's the bit plus interest you pay.
But surely you're just paying off a smaller amount, and just the one thing you do is always pay off. Don't miss out on the payments.
You don't miss out on the payments. You're paying off the small amount, but at the end of the 3 years, then you come back with the car. Now, you have to have met, there's mileage restrictions on it, so you have to make sure that you didn't exceed that. You have to have the car serviced, keep it in good condition, and then you bring it back and the dealer says to you, right, you've now got three options. You can hand me back the keys and that's it, you're gone. You can roll over to another PCP, and if the car is now worth 11,000 because you've kept it well and the market's okay, you'll get that extra 1,000 and you can put it towards your next PCP deposit. Or if you decide after the 3 years, I love this car, I can't part with it, you pay the 10,000 and you drive off.
Okay, but that phrase you use there is keep the car serviced. What does keep the car serviced mean? Is that Jimmy down the lane who does it for 50 quid or?
No.
All right.
That means servicing it properly. The other thing as well is the mileage can be quite restrictive. So you're, if you're a high mileage driver, the chances are you won't get a PCP. Right. They usually limit them at anywhere between 15 and 18,000 kilometres, and it can become quite costly if you go over that.
And a lot of people doing A to B to work in the mornings every single day for like if it's a long way, they're restricted then.
It could. The other thing you'd have to worry about is a year and a half into a contract, you could change jobs and suddenly you're doing an extra 50 kilometres a day and that has put you out of that band. So there isn't a huge amount of flexibility in them, and you need to know that you're going to have the finances in place. The other thing you need to be aware of is there's lots of ads on the radio for PCPs and lots of ads in newspapers, and they all say, you know, drive away in a brand new car for 200 euros a month. They're usually based on a 30% deposit. Now, if you're paying a 30% deposit, it's a much bigger stake in a car that you may not own at the end. So you need to do the maths there.
Yeah, and by the way, just when you mention that, I want to talk to you about car ads on the telly. Mm. What's going on there? What kind of world has been opened up of madness? Like at the very end of about 7 minutes, oh, that was an ad for a car. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. That's the nature of ads at the moment, though. You kind of remember this scenario, but you don't remember what it was for.
There is a lot of that, all right. Listen, I haven't mentioned Brexit yet, so I better mention it now. Because during the recession, everybody was buying cars over the border. Is that still going on? Will Brexit make a mess of it for people? And if so, basically, what's the impact of Brexit on the car market?
Yeah, the biggest impact on the car market has been the increase in the number of imports. Now, there's always been a relationship between a drop in sterling and imports, but the highest imports went to was about 50,000 up to now. They're now, for the first time ever in 2018, they exceeded the 100,000 mark, and there's over 8,000 a month coming in. So it's a huge number.
From across the border or from across the sea?
From both, mainly right. from the north. The other thing to remember, though, is it's not all private buyers. A lot of dealers are bringing cars in because the bottom fell out of the car market in 2008 and it didn't start to recover till 2013, and it slowly recovered through then. So there's actually quite a shortage of older, decent second-hand cars. So a lot of the imports are plugging that. But the big problem, I suppose, for the car manufacturers in Ireland, the car distributors, is that people are opting to buy second-hand imports rather than new cars. So new car sales are down and imports are through the roof. There nearly was a case last year that nearly the same number of new cars were sold as were imported. So that's quite an issue.
Here's one of 51552. Thinking of buying a second-hand diesel, but I'm worried there will be carbon tax on diesels soon.
I think there's going to be carbon tax full stop. I think that's definite. As I said before, if you're high mileage and you have to buy a diesel, there isn't really an alternative. My concern with diesel would be residual values. We don't know what's going to happen in 3-4 years, but if you're buying a second-hand car, especially if it's 2 or 3 years old, the residuals, the depreciation, the biggest chunk of depreciation has already affected it, so you're actually okay.
All right, okay. By the way, we are talking to Geraldine Herbert here, who knows everything about cars, obviously. 51552. If you're thinking of getting your first family car, what are the things to think about, do you think?
Okay, first of all, if you're buying any car, do a budget and stick to it. So figure out how much can I afford to spend on a monthly basis or whatever. When you're doing that, factor in the running costs, the motor tax, the insurance, all of those things. The next thing you need to do for a family car is prioritise what it is that you need. If you have 3 kids or 4 kids, you might need, you know, a 7-seater. That might be your big thing. If you go travelling an awful lot, you might need a big boot. Space might be the thing. So, you know, consider what is the most important thing that you need from a car. The other thing as well is look to the future. You might have 2 children now. You're buying maybe a new car. You're intending on holding on to it for 4 years, but you're planning another child next year. So there's no point buying, you know, the small little car if you're going to need a bigger one later. And then make sure sort of what body style works for you. Hatchbacks are practical, but they mightn't suit a big family. Mm-hmm. Estates are great if you need a big boot. You might live in a rural area. Maybe an SUV is required. So they're the sort of things. Also, in terms of boot space, you can have a very big boot, but it can be very unusable. So make sure, just figure out what you need to carry in the boot. Some boots have, you know, split levels. Some just are wide, but they're not very deep. So it just depends on what you need for it. Cabin storage, that sort of thing you need to look at as well. And also how much the driving experience is going to make a difference to you.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't really care about driving and it's just you want to keep the kids happy and you want the DVD players in the back and you really don't care, you'll toot along.
Okay, let's go over the DVD players. We've had the serious stuff. Tell us about the gadgets then. What's worth having, what's not?
Again, it depends. It depends really on the kind of price of car you're spending. You're spending money on. Like leather is great in a family car, but obviously not in a mainstream car. If you're going to go for leather, you need to be spending extra money on. You need to be spending a decent amount of money on a car. Apple. I'm losing my notes here.
The Apple CarPlay and the Android.
Yeah, that's absolutely essential. The thing about these, Dave, all of these options is you won't get them in an entry-level car. So you're always better off when you're buying a car. Mm. Don't buy top of the range because you'll never get your money back. Mid-range will always have the goodies that are applicable to that range of car. So you're always better getting that. So the Android and Apple CarPlay usually comes at mid-level, and that's really essential. You can plug your phone in. You have all of your apps and everything actually on the touchscreen on your phone. That makes a huge difference, and that's becoming kind of a key seller for young people, particularly in terms of cars.
What about the warm arse on these mornings, the heated and the cool seats? Is that a good thing?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the cool seats. They actually do feel quite odd, but there's nothing like heated seats at this time of the year. They're not probably an option worth paying for, but if you upgrade to that mid-level, then they are actually worth it because you'll be getting them.
What about the panoramic roof and all that kind of thing?
Yeah, again, in a family car, it can add great airiness and lightness to a cabin.
Makes the thing feel bigger than it might be.
Yeah, the only thing, the concern you have about the panoramic sunroof is it does add weight to the car, and the problem with weight is it can affect your fuel consumption. Now, having said that, there's lots of other things that do as well, but, you know, you have to weigh up the pros and cons.
Yeah, right. By the way, actually, there's one here in your list, which is like, I've got this thing. I've never had it before. I'm driving a Qajar. I absolutely love it. It's brilliant. It's fantastic. It's the reverse camera.
Oh, it's essential.
It's like it's just fantastic.
Yeah.
It really is. Like, I never would have even like wished for one.
It's absolutely essential.
No, I can't do without it. By the way, I have gear sticks as well. I want to feel I'm driving. I don't particularly want to go automatic.
Well, automatic is becoming a lot more common, and also these kind of dual that you can switch between one
but
or the other.
The old reverse camera thing is...
It's absolutely fabulous, and it's funny, it used to be one of these things that
parking
was only on luxury cars, and now it's on little, small, mainstream cars. But once you get used to it, it's just that, especially for people in housing estates where kids can fly out and everything, it is really reassuring to know that you can actually see everything behind you. Now, of course, Dave, you have to, you know, rely on all the other things and still look around or whatever, but
the,
it makes
the rear view mirrors and all the rest.
Difference.
I mean, the parking thing is just huge in between two cars. Yeah,
it is. It's brilliant.
The metallic paint and automatic gearbox and all those things, do you?
Metallic paint is always a good one in terms of resale values, and also if you're driving kind of a sport.
Why is the metallic paint?
People just love it. It's kind of one of those things when you sell on a premium car, people expect metallic paint. Automatic gearbox, again, though, in premium cars, people would expect. Automatic tailgate is another great one, and basically you just press the button and the boot opens itself, and then you press the button and it closes. That doesn't sound like a big deal.
Sorry, is that what automatic tailgate is?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I've never heard of it.
So when you're coming along,
I thought it was basically you're
shopping.
Following somebody very closely. Yeah,
no,
and when they run in a door, you run in as well.
So you just sit there, the car tailgates people. Yeah, that's an interesting idea.
Automatic tailgate means your boot opens with a button.
Yeah, and then it closes with a button, which is even better. So if you've loads of stuff in your hands and you have to press the button and then it just opens, and then you can just jump into the car and the boot closes itself.
God,
see, there's a whole world out there you're missing, Dave.
Yeah, well, geez, I'm enjoying what I'm driving, though. What exactly is high mileage, is the question here. Everything is relative, says you.
Yeah, to be honest, I would recommend somebody considering diesel if they do sort of 16, 17,000, 18,000 definitely. So that's what I would consider high mileage.
Right.
I'm sure there's people out there doing much, much more.
Oh, God, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Going from A to B, as they say, every single day, etc. Listen, Geraldine, thank you so much for dropping in to talk to us today. Geraldine Herbert, who tells you all about motoring, etc. in the Sunday Indo and more besides. Thanks a million, Geraldine. Good luck. Take it easy. Where?